Thanks for tuning in to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine on WOOC 105.3 FM, Troy. I'm Megan Marone.
And I'm Kristen Parsons. We've got a brilliant program planned for you tonight.
Today we'll be discussing labor issues in the Capital Region with Mike Keenan, former president of the Troy Area Labor Council.
Then we have a visit to the studio from Lawrence Warden of the Albany Bicycle Coalition.
After that, we'll hear a dialogue between Brandon Miller, the Arts and Education Director of the Sanctuary for Independent Media, and John Olszewski, who's the director of the documentary Quest, which is winning many awards. The film will be screened this Saturday night at the Sanctuary for Independent Media.
And we'll end the show with a visit from our youth interns. Trayvon Votrin will provide us with a youth events calendar, and Ariana Young and Aaron Pinder will interview WOOC correspondent H. Boss Jr. on his life as a motivational speaker and entrepreneur. But first, here are some headlines.
At least six members of the College of St. Rose's Board of Trustees, including the chair, have resigned in recent weeks. These resignations follow clashes with President Carolyn Stefano over the direction of the school. St. Rose has been dealing with a $9 million deficit by cutting staff. Faculty members have demanded the removal of the president, claiming that she violated the requirement to seek their input before restructuring academic programs. A number of the departing trustees complained that she had a secretive style and too many outside commitments.
A lower court has rejected a challenge by Protect the Adirondacks to the construction of additional snowmobile trails by the state in the Adirondacks. The environmental group charged that the trails violated the Forever Wild Clause of the state constitution. The group is considering an appeal.
Schenectady-based GE Power announced that it is cutting 12,000 jobs worldwide, about one-fifth of its global workforce. The fate of the 4,000 workers in Schenectady is not clear, with GE claiming that local cuts won't be as deep as the global cuts. GE Power makes the power plant equipment, including steam turbines and generators, that are made right in Schenectady. Troy City Council member incumbent Mark McGrath has been declared the winner in his contest over Democratic challenger Cindy Barkley. He won by one vote. McGrath secured the apparent victory after a judge ordered three contested absentee ballots to be counted, all of which went to the Republican. While the Democrats will still have a 4-3 majority in the new council, they will lack the five votes that are needed to override the state cap on property tax increases.
Australia's parliament voted on Thursday to make same-sex marriage legal, with just four members of the House of Representatives voting against the bill.
New figures from HUD showed that homelessness increased last year for the first time in 7 years. The 1% increase was driven by a surge in the number of people living on the streets in Los Angeles and other West Coast cities. There are reported 554,000 homeless people in the United States. In recent years, California, Oregon, and Washington have seen an increasing number of encampments along freeways and rivers. Local governments are struggling to come up with money for long-term solutions, and there have been conflicts over whether to crack down on street camping and even feeding the homeless. Advocates note that the HUD figures undercount those living in the streets and shelters. The figures also do not include individuals who are forced to seek temporary shelter in the homes of friends or relatives. For those of you who are just tuning in, you're listening to WOOC's Hudson Mohawk Magazine on 105.3 FM Troy.
To learn more about this program and how to support the Sanctuary for Independent Media, please visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
WOOC correspondent Brandon Miller, who is also the Arts and Education Coordinator at the Sanctuary for Independent Media, sat down with filmmaker John Olszewski. He'll be appearing at the Sanctuary for Independent Media this Saturday at 3361 6th Avenue in Troy for a screening of his new film, Quest.
Hi, this is Brandon Miller. I'm the Arts and Education Coordinator at the Sanctuary for Independent Media and a filmmaker. I'm really honored to invite John Olszewski to speak with us today. John is coming this Saturday evening to the Sanctuary for Independent Media to give a Capital Region premiere of his film Quest as part of our iEar Presents film series. John, welcome to WOOC Studios.
I'm really excited to be here. Thank you.
So could you please tell us about Quest? There's quite a buzz. It's very exciting. Could you let us know a little bit about the film?
Yeah, so Quest is a film. It's a portrait of an American family. I spent over 10 years making it. And what it does is it follows the Rainey family, who live in North Philadelphia, and they run a music studio out of their house to create a sort of a safe place, a sanctuary, if you will, for their neighborhood, where they're nurturing aspiring artists, and they're also working class jobs, and they're raising their children, and you see them grow and change over, you know, a significant period of time.
Well, that's about that show. 10 years, that's amazing to focus on one film for 10 years. That must be a lot of footage. I'm wondering if you could share how you got started 10 years ago and how you, what kept you going and where the film is now. What's happening?
So this all started, I fell in love with North Philadelphia before I even met the Rainey family. And I was, you know, at the time I was working construction as a day job and doing still photography on the side, kind of doing photo essays and, you know, just following people around, meeting people, sometimes just climbing around abandoned buildings and taking pictures. And in North Philadelphia, I got connected to an organization called New Jerusalem Now. And I started doing a photo essay with them. And I spent, you know, a year and a half, you know, working on this photo essay. And then, you know, in collaboration with the community and the organization, I decided to start teaching a photography class, to adults who are connected to the organization. And, you know, through that, after class one day, one of my students was like, "Hey, you know, my brother runs a hip-hop studio out of his house a couple blocks away. Do you want to meet him?" And so I was like, "Oh, okay, sure." And so we, like, you know, walk over, knock on the door, and Quest, who ends up being, you know, one of the stars of the film, opens the door, sees me, you know, kind of, you know, with the camera, and is just like, "What's this guy up to?" You know, so North Philly is, you know, predominantly African American community, has kind of been through a lot, has sort of, the system has failed the community in a lot of ways, and so folks are left to kind of take care of themselves, and they do it in a really beautiful way, which is sort of contrary to the way that the sort of mainstream or local media depicts them. Just kind of showing up when something tragic happens. And so anyway, Quest sees me kind of standing there with a camera, and he told me later his first instinct was like, "Yo, this guy's a cop. What's going on here?" But we exchanged business cards, and, a couple of weeks later, he reached out to me, you know, knowing that I was a photographer, and invited me into the studio to take some pictures of his artists while they were recording. When I first showed up at the studio, a couple weeks later, I was just really blown away by the community that they had created. The studio was like in their living room. There's this just whole crew of guys that were just, you know, making hip hop, expressing themselves, and I just wanted to be a part of it. I was like, anything I can do. And so I was taking pictures for like album arts and, you know, just really hanging out. And, you know, this eventually led to, you know, doing a photo essay after I learned about Quest day job, which was delivering papers. And so I would follow him on his paper route and then kind of follow him back to the studio while he was doing his creative work, which is, you know, I sort of saw myself in that as I was working construction, you know, as my day job and doing the photography stuff on the side. And so then we did that for about a year and a half. And then I just felt like still photo was maybe not doing the job in terms of really reflecting what I'd experienced. And so we decided to make a short little documentary. This was 2007. And it just kind of took a little bit longer. And I think that what sustained the project for all this time, one, is that I was just blown away by the family, the layers of, you know, what I'd experienced early on. And then I felt like my material wasn't matching what I'd experienced. And so I was like, "Oh, I want to film a little bit more, and I want to film a little bit more just to try to get a little bit deeper." And then as time kind of went on, the strength of the relationship, you know, just increased, and we just got closer and closer, and we just sort of connected as artists, and we had the shared vision of like, yeah, we want to tell this story. We want to kind of tell a story out of North Philly from the point of view of the Rainey family, of folks who actually live there, rather than a story of North Philly from, you know, the perspective of someone from the outside. And so just the friendship is what sort of sustained it through many years of no budget and not knowing if the film would be any good or if anyone would want to see it or care about it. And then, you know, ultimately we, you know, kind of finished the film in 2017. We premiered at the Sundance Film Festival. And from there, we've been on this wild festival tour. We've played over 75 festivals. We've won a bunch of awards. And we're just at the beginning of our theatrical release. So last week, we opened the film theatrically in Philadelphia. And it was incredible. We had an amazing opening weekend to the point that they extended the run for an additional week. This Friday, we're opening in New York City. And then the following Friday, we're going to open up in Los Angeles. So the film is just, you know, really blown up, and it's something that none of us ever would have anticipated early on, but just really, I don't know, just really grateful for all the love that, you know, we've received, you know, through this process. A lot of love was put into this film. I, as a filmmaker, received a lot of love from the family and the community, and that's what sustained the film. And now that it's out there, there's just a lot of love and good, deep conversation and connection happening. And so just really excited about this thing, and also excited to continue this journey with this really incredible family. So that's kind of everything in a nutshell.
Well, that's fantastic. And you're going to feel the love when you come to Troy, New York to premiere it here. We are really honored to have you be here. And in the last few moments, I want to share with our audience that you are also going to be offering a workshop earlier in the evening. And it is going to be on cinema verite and human rights. And in that workshop, I know you're going to share some survival strategies for making it as an independent filmmaker. Can you tell us a little bit about what people could expect from the workshop? There's going to be a workshop at, I need to double check the time. I believe it's at 4 till 5:30, followed by a community potluck at 5:30, where you are going to really share the love because people will be connecting with you, and we're all dedicated to having independent voice here with media. And then you're going to have your screening at 7. But at 4:30 in that more intimate cinema verite workshop, what are some of the ideas that we might be talking about together?
So, yeah, I'll talk about process, you know, in terms of, you know, how do you start a project? I'll show some clips. You know, that made the film. I'll show some clips that didn't make the film. We'll talk about, you know, gear. We'll talk about sort of the relationship between a filmmaker and their subjects, and really get into sort of the impact that storytelling can have. And storytelling is an incredibly powerful medium, and it can impact the community in a very positive way. But if you don't get it right, it can really be damaging to a community. So those are some of the things we'll talk about. And I think that independent filmmaking is not for the faint of heart. But, you know, through it, I see it as like, you know, I make films to make friends. And by telling stories and making media, it's an amazing catalyst for community and connection. And so I'll share some of my journey in that, and then just be open to whoever, you know, shows up to ask, you know, any questions they might have. So that's sort of how we'll do it.
That's wonderful. And we welcome you, dear friend, to the Sanctuary for Independent Media this Saturday. And we are very excited to learn from you and to watch your film, Quest. Thank you so much, John.
Really looking forward to it. I can't wait.
That was WOOC correspondent Brandon Miller speaking with filmmaker John Olszewski. John will be appearing at the Sanctuary for Independent Media at 7 p.m. this Saturday for a screening of his new film, Quest. He will also be leading a workshop at 4 p.m. and sharing a community potluck at 5:30. Please visit the Sanctuary for mediasanctuary.org for advanced tickets and more information. Okay, our first guest tonight is Mike Keenan, former president of the Troy Area Labor Council and a retired member of the Public Employee Federation. Mike is a longtime union organizer and leader. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So what prompted you to get involved in the labor movement?
Well, I grew up in New York City in a very blue-collar neighborhood. And to be honest, I think I thought every family came from union members. But in particular, my father was involved in the 1970 postal strike in New York City. And that was a very radicalizing event for my father and myself. And When I started working for the state, I found the union there. It was actually more of an insurance agent. So I became involved and wanted to get the AFL-CIO. And I'm actually a founder of the Public Employee Federation back in 1979.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. So can you tell us a little more about your background?
Well, I went to RPI. That's why I'm up here. I like the area. I actually was inspired by Earth Day and changed to environmental engineering. And I've worked for the Department of Environmental Conservation for over 30 years dealing with air pollution in New York City and, as I would say, from the safe distance of 200 miles away.
Okay.
What is the Troy Area Labor Council?
It represents the AFL-CIO in Rensselaer County. It's a very old organization. It's been over 100 years old. And any union or member in the county can join. So we have lots of different types of unions, from public employees to building trades to everything. I find it very interesting because you get more than the point of view that you would in your own union.
And how was the Troy Area Labor Council started?
It's hard to tell because it's literally probably approaching 150 years old. I would assume, because if you're familiar with Troy's history, this was a very big union town because of all the manufacturing and all the problems. And the purpose of the Labor Council is to support unions, particularly during contract problems or negotiations, stuff like that.
What are some of the Troy Area Labor Council programs?
Our current programs, well, we do political action, but we also do a lot of solidarity work. Right now, we've actually adopted Monday afternoon's picketing down at the Albany Hilton because they're having very bad contract negotiations. So we go and we picket every Monday from 5:30 to 6:30. And last year there was two major conflicts in the area. There was the Honeywell and also Momentum. And we actually adopted Honeywell on the Mondays too. So I've done a lot of picketing over the last year and a half.
Okay, and what are some issues the Troy Area Labor Council is involved in?
Well, current issues besides the difficulties at the Albany Hilton would be, I'd say one is immigration. One of our major programs, I guess, is every year we do tabling at the Troy Victorian Stroll, and we hand out literature. And we give out why unions are important, coloring books, calendars, and stuff like that. But this year we also did a petition for where we asked people if they were from Rensselaer County, and if they were, we asked if they would sign a petition calling upon the incoming Troy City Council in Rensselaer County to declare Troy and Rensselaer County as sanctuary communities. So we're much broader than just, you know, what some people probably consider unions doing.
So how do you, are there any effects from the petition so far?
I guess we're waiting for the incoming Troy City Council. We did collect over 150 signatures, so that was pretty good because that was over the space of probably 3-4 hours. And that it shows that people, even when they come to celebrate a holiday, still have a conscience and, you know, are willing to help people when they're having difficulties.
So in the book Death of the Liberal Class, Chris Hedges talks about how there's a destruction of the liberal institutions within society, but he uses the word liberal kind of loosely, not in the political sense, but more in terms of describing the institutions that kept check on power. So certain religious communities, education, journalism, and one of those is labor unions. And he kind of talks about how the labor unions have lost a lot of power, or and especially in the cultural realm, there isn't like a wide cultural imagination about labor unions. So do you see this, or do you see a renewed interest in the need for laborers in a corporate oligarchical environment?
Actually, I think I'm the problem that I saw with unions, and I can only go back, you know, to George Meany. I don't know if you would remember him. But unions after World War II basically bought in to the corporate capitalist structure. And that kind of worked until the neoliberalism came into play, you know, mostly starting with Reagan, but you could trace it back to Nixon as well, that the corporations just lost any interest in caring about their own workers. And as a matter of fact, I heard earlier in your show that GE's laying off 12,000 employees. When I first came to this area, when I was a co-op student, I actually worked at GE in Schenectady. At that point, GE employed 30,000 workers over there. So the corporations turned upon the workers, and it took, I think, to quite recently, probably 10 years, for the unions to realize that they've been snookered so badly. But as I said, I've probably picketed more in the last couple of years than I have over the last 10 before that. So there's a resurgence of wanting to commit and fight a struggle for better benefits and stuff like that.
I also think activism is more prevalent today than, you know, more people being involved, you know, with very important things. So how does Detroit Area Labor Council interact with other councils and unions?
Well, this area is represented by what's called the Capital District Area Labor Federation, which represents, I think it's 9 counties around here. So the Troy Area Labor Council is one of 5 labor councils in this area. Historically, we've been Rensselaer County. It's probably called the Troy area because back when they started, you know, say in 1880 or something, there wasn't much going on industrial past the city of Troy. But that's one way we tie in. And of course, any union that's interested, you know, can send delegates. We meet monthly. We have probably 25 delegates in attendance. We probably have about 35 or 40 altogether. And if a union or actually any particular group, they have a problem, they're welcome to come and ask us to help.
Okay. And as the treasurer of the Troy Area Labor Council, what are your specific duties?
My specific duties are, well, we do an annual work plan and budget. And I write the checks and basically make sure that we stay kind of within our budgetary items. But I used to be the president. And to be honest, the treasurer sometimes has more to do than the president. So when I stepped back from president, which got me out of going to a lot of meetings, I decided to continue doing this because I like spreadsheets, and it's, you know, I use it to keep track of our finances.
Okay.
How does the Troy Area Labor Council benefit the people of Troy?
Well, the fact that unions exist, everyone has higher wages and benefits. I mean, there's statistics that show that not only do unionized workers make more than non-unionized, but in areas with high union density, everyone makes more. And as I also pointed out, we did the petition for a sanctuary city. We've done other activities past just what, you know, people would consider, you know, contract issues and stuff like that.
Wonderful. Do you have anything else you'd like to add?
Oh, just thank you for having me. And I want you to know we do wish the radio station luck, and I think you're doing a great service yourselves.
Thank you very much. Absolutely. Thank you, Mike. That was longtime activist Mike Keenan talking about the local labor movement and his work with the Troy Area Labor Council. For those just tuning in, I'm Kristen Parsons.
And I'm Megan Marone. You're listening to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine on WOOC 105.3 FM Troy.
To learn more about the Hudson Mohawk Magazine program, to listen online, and to learn how to support the Sanctuary for Independent Media, check us out online at mediasanctuary.org. Next up, we have another in our bike block series with guest Lorenz Warden live in the studio. Lorenz is a co-founder of the Albany Bicycle Coalition and has been advocating for people on bicycles in the capital region for over 12 years. Hello, Lorenz.
Hello, good evening. Thank you very much for having me on your program.
Thank you for coming. So how long have you been advocating for bicyclists' rights and bike infrastructure in this area?
Well, formally, around 11 years. We've been in operation. We started out as a bunch of people who like to ride our bicycles, and we slowly evolved into an advocacy group for promoting bicycling and promoting infrastructure changes in the region, in the capital region.
So what got you started with this?
Pardon me?
What got you started doing this?
Well, as I said, it was a bunch of people who like to ride their bicycles, and we realized that, at least in speaking specifically to the city of Albany, that there were a lot of issues concerning bicycle safety. We conducted and hosted a critical mass bike ride every year, or every month, actually, on the last Friday of every month as a way of showing people that bicycles should be on the street. We also host annually a ride of silence to sadly commemorate those in the area who have been killed while riding their bicycles. And I should point out that a recent occurrence, we had two bicycle fatalities in the last several months in the area, both of which were caused by either errors by the bicyclist or by operator of a motor vehicle.
And so why do you do this?
Well, the reason I do it is because I want to ride my bicycle. And I should make it very clear that our interest in bicycling is what I would call transit bicycling, people that are using their bicycle to get from one place to another. And we certainly are enthused about recreational cycling, but our main emphasis is on bicycling as a means of transportation. And in the city of Albany, and I think it's also true in Troy and other metropolitan areas, many people have only one form of transportation, and that is their bicycle. Roughly 25% of the households in the city of Albany do not have access to a motor vehicle, so they're dependent on their feet or the public transportation or a bicycle. And those people are entitled to safe transit on the road so they can go about their business of work or pleasure or errands.
So in terms of bike coalitions and the whole culture of bicycling, does your group actually team up with the Troy Bike Rescue?
Well, we are related to Troy Bike Rescue, Albany Bike Rescue, Parks and Trails New York, Mohawk Hudson Cycling Club, and the New York Bicycling Coalition. So we're involved with those groups and try to work with them, as we have, I think, with Troy, to further bicycling issues.
And can you tell us how ABC, the Albany Bicycle Coalition, came to be and what has been its role over the past decade?
Well, we, as I said earlier, we came into being as a group, a number of people who like to ride bicycles. We started out by showing bicycle movies in the Albany Public Library. Our meeting place was a picnic table in Washington Park for probably the first year or so of our existence. We eventually incorporated. We're a New York State chartered not-for-profit organization. We have officers. We have dues-paying members. And, again, our interest is in promoting bicycling. And it's really a two-way street, like a teeter-totter. There's the infrastructure that makes it possible for people to bicycle safely. And then those who are riding their bicycles have to get out and ride their bicycles so that the government agencies see that people are using their bicycles for transportation. And bicyclists demand that they get their fair share of transportation dollars. Right now, we're in a, as you probably well know, we're in an era where we have ignored our roadway infrastructure nationwide, and that's particularly evident in those communities like Troy and Albany that are plagued with, I shouldn't say plagued, but have the benefit of having a freeze-thaw cycle and a lot of snow and ice that causes wear and tear on the roadway. So with these, this deterioration of our infrastructure, there's currently quite an aggressive move by both federal and state government, local governments to make repairs. And each of those repairs necessitates redoing of a road. And this presents a tremendous opportunity for bicyclists to encourage those who are designing and executing road projects to include bicyclists and, by extension, those who are on foot or are using public transportation, that the road be made suitable for their use also, not just for motor vehicles.
In your own descriptive language, could you describe what is the difference for you between traversing upstate New York by car and getting around on a bicycle?
The difference? Well, I think it's a lot of fun to ride a bicycle. As a culture, we need to, as everyone knows, we finally detected that we need to get a little bit more exercise. We've also learned that we've denigrated our environment largely because of our use of motor vehicles for every possible movement. We've, in many ways, ruined our cities by making them parking deserts with great expanses of the public space taken up by parked cars. I noticed recently that Troy is, there's elements in Troy that are complaining there's not enough parking in Troy, and I would counter by saying there's too much parking in Troy because it's we've made it too easy to get around by a motor vehicle rather than using more sensible means of transportation. So
what are the most recent bike-related developments in Albany?
Well, there's a couple, and I one of them is a little bit of bragging, but the Albany Bicycle Coalition received a grant from or through the offices of Assemblymember Fahey, who I would like to mention as a plug for her, is the only elected representative in the state of New York who has ever ridden the Erie Canal Trail from Buffalo to Albany, which she did 2 years ago. And she also rides her bicycle frequently to her official duties in the state capitol. And anyway, through her offices, we received a grant, which we used to develop a Bike Albany map, which is a free interactive map on our website. And it's built on a Google substructure, and it allows someone to put in, as with Google Maps, put in a destination and put in a starting point, and the interactive map will lead them through the streets of Albany on low-stress, low-traffic roadways, where they will avoid busy intersections. It has informational points on it. Of course, it has all the bike shops listed. And it has little informational bullets where there are needs for extra caution, such as when crossing some of the major thoroughfares. So what it does is give someone who's unfamiliar with the area, someone who's hesitant to ride in traffic, which is the most common complaint I hear, it gives them the guidance to get around the city, again, using low traffic volume streets and generally safer intersections. So that's something that Albany Bicycle Coalition was able to bring to the bear. We also have the, hopefully, the completion of the Madison Avenue Traffic Calming Project, which will be Albany's premier bicycle facility. It will be a mile and a half long from Allen Street to Lark Street in Albany, and we'll have bicycle lanes and traffic calming structure. And that is going to be, unfortunately, it was delayed by the city and will not be completed until next year. We do have some bicycle facilities going in. Van Rensselaer Boulevard now has very elaborate bicycle lanes from Northern Boulevard to Route 378. In the outlying areas, Delaware Avenue Traffic Calming in Bethlehem is another effort to reduce the craziness of having a four-lane highway going through the town of Bethlehem and changing it to a complete streets treatment, whether it be a center turn lane, two motor vehicle lanes, and two bicycle lanes, which will go through the heart of Bethlehem and hopefully will facilitate people in their commuting. And there are several other road projects going on that we engage with. We go to the public meetings, and we try to encourage people to comment on them. And anybody who is interested in walking, riding the bus, driving their car, or riding their bicycles should try to get involved with these projects because they will affect how things go for you in the future.
So have you seen any developments related to these new pathways? So are there arts, historical, cultural stops along the way on these new bike paths?
Well, that's a very good question for Troy, because Troy has been working for a number of years on the Collar City Ramble, which ultimately will be a route through the city that will hit the architectural treasures that are plentiful in Troy, and some of the natural areas, the parks, waterfront, and so on. And when that is done, it will be a very attractive feature of the city to go to these various spots by foot or by bicycle. In the city of Albany, we've done historical tours, riding around to the various features of the old Erie Canal, some of the mansions, just as a way of showing people what their built environment looks like.
So are you up to date on these plans for Troy and the Ramble?
Yes, I think I am. I'm very pleased that Parks and Trails New York and the Transport Troy Group and the city government have put on the table a plan to connect the Uncle Sam Trail in North Troy to the entrance to the Mohawk Hudson Bike Hike Trail at the Menands Route 378 Bridge. So when that is completed, it'll be a marked route through the city. It will have a variety of bicycle facilities, in some cases bicycle lanes or protected bicycle lanes, buffered bicycle lanes, and some shared lanes also. But it will be a way for people to navigate the city from north to south, and it will hopefully bring people into the city, which will be beneficial to the businesses and to the general cultural enrichment of the town. And also give people a way of getting around the city for the errands and work-related issues.
Technically, there's a bike master plan, but there seems to be a lot of talk, but not much else. So do you think that everything that you just said is going to actually happen in 2018?
I think the Uncle Sam Trail through Troy will happen. I think the mayor's supportive of it, and there's certainly, I think, a good, solid a group of people within the city of Troy that are pushing and promoting that this could happen. The streets are all there, that nothing has to be built per se, but of course there has to be a lot of lane markings, crosswalks, traffic signalization, so there will be some money involved, and hopefully Troy will be able to tap into that money. Parks and Trails New York has been very aggressive in helping the city plan out this route. And I think that their expertise and their enthusiasm for it will be helpful in the city. As far as bicycle master plans, we like to plan. Governments like to plan. Albany is, and I don't want to speak ill of Albany, but Albany is very enthusiastic about planning things and not so much on getting the things done. Many of the bicycle facilities that are needed don't need a lot of planning. There's plenty of engineering documentation that tells you exactly how a route can be mapped out, what needs to be done, and someone with appropriate skills can do the whole thing without a lot of study. In some cases, it is necessary to do a study because there's going to be an impact on other forms of transportation or on businesses and so on. So I'm not all that enthused about having a bicycle master plan, unless it's a living plan that can be changed without a lot of undue effort. It should not be something that's locked up, published, copywritten, and put on the shelf. And I'm afraid that's what the case is in the city of Albany, that we have a bicycle master plan that does not, in my opinion, does not properly reflect the needs of bicyclists currently. It's about 10 years old, almost 10 years old, and a lot has changed in that period of time.
So do you feel like in the past few years you've gone from being a fringe group or voice to an actual lobby of some importance as far as the city is concerned?
Yes, I think we have. I think we're responsible in how we approach the various issues facing bicyclists. We try to do our homework. We try to be prepared when we speak or write about different projects. I think we have the respect of the city government in Troy, including the Common Council and the mayor's office. So I think we've evolved into one of the many groups in Albany that's interested in the future of the city and making it a wonderful place to live, work, and play.
Wonderful. And how can people find out about ABC or get involved with alternative transportation advocacy?
Well, I'm going to make one little correction on that. The only real basic form of transportation that we all share is walking. You have to extend that to bring it up to date to say those people who are riding in wheelchairs is an alternative to walking, that's basic transportation. So up to about 125 or 150 years ago, the only alternative form of transportation was if you knew someone who had a horse or in some case a train. So all forms of transportation other than walking are alternative. And I say that because I don't want bicycling to be viewed as something that's out of the mainstream and just for recreation or just for children. It's very much part of our transportation mix, just as much as motor vehicles, individual motor vehicles or buses. So that little personal note made.
Do you have anything else you'd like to add?
Pardon me?
Do you have anything else you'd like to add?
No, I just will put out a word to all bicyclists. If you're interested in developing bicycling, you've got to be aware of what's going on and make your thoughts known. And if you're riding at night, please put on reflective clothes and wear a red blinky light so I don't hit you.
All right, well, thanks for coming in. That was transportation activist Lawrence Warden, co-founder of the Albany Bicycle Coalition. Tonight we're joined by youth interns Trayvon Votrin, Ariana Young, Lauren Wilson, and Aaron Pinder. Welcome back from a Thanksgiving break.
Thank you. Happy to be back.
How was your Thanksgiving break?
It was good. We ate a lot. We all was together, of course.
We eat a lot of food, you know.
As we should.
Yeah.
Okay. And who are the members of our community? Who are the people of Troy? In tonight's youth segment, our interns are going to interview WOOC correspondent, motivational speaker, and entrepreneur H. Bosch Jr. in the first of a series of segments, which we would call Humans of Troy. Welcome to the studio, Bosch.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
So, Ariana, you have the first question for Bosch, and...
So, I just, you know, now that you're here, just tell us a little bit about yourself, you know, how you came in this and arrived at this point in life.
Well, first of all, I want to say thank you to you young men and women for giving me the opportunity to be on the show tonight and be interviewed. Secondly, my journey starts, I'll start in 2005. In 2005, I was the owner of H. Bosch Moving and Storage. At that time, I was the largest minority-owned moving company in upstate New York. At that time, I had 3 trucks, 12 employees, and I was making almost $500,000 a year. Then all of a sudden, there was a zig and a zag. My life took a turn in a different direction. I'd say the trajectory of my life changed. I was arrested, charged with 4 felonies, facing 35 years in prison. Listen to this closely. Shock you. You didn't expect to hear that, right? For the next 2 years, I fought tooth and nail defending myself, spending upwards of $200,000 in cash. 2 years later, after spending almost $200,000 in cash and going through a series of back and forth court dates, I was acquitted, found innocent of all charges. In addition to winning in criminal court, I also won in civil court. I turned around and sued them for money. But the money I sued them for versus the money I was making at the time was literally pennies on the dollar. But it still changed the trajectory of my life, which led me to this journey of, after that, I said to myself, and I don't want to get too in-depth into the trial and the ups and downs of that. After that, I said to myself, what do I want to do for the rest of my life? Because I knew that had happened for a reason, because up until then, my life was fine. I was cruising right along, making plenty of money, traveling all over the world, being on the right side of all the issues and giving back to the community, really doing things. And really, really, life was grand. Like I said, I was on top of my game. Then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, it changed. So after the trial, after the acquittal, and after the civil suit, I stepped back and I said, well, what do I want to do with the rest of my life? And I knew that as bad as it was, it happened for a reason, okay? And I had to accept that, and I had to take and realize that my life goes on. So in essence, when I really begin to realize it, I said, you know what? I need to turn this setback into a setup for a comeback. So I began to put together things in my life, and I got involved in different organizations. And one of the groups that led me into the speaking industry was, I was passionate that I didn't want to happen to me to happen to someone else. Meaning, I was falsely accused of a crime that changed the trajectory of my life. I mean, I would be a millionaire three times over. And what happened to me happened, but I said, how can I get involved? How can I use my voice to make a difference so this won't happen to someone else, in addition to empowering people to make productive and significant changes in their lives by showing them that you can overcome adversity no matter what has been dealt to you, the hand that, you know, you've been dealt, or, you know, the triumphs that you have to face, the challenges. So I got involved with a group, and I began to lobby and get really involved in the wrongful conviction, wrongful prosecution community. So that led me to the speaking part of my journey, because I started to speak all over the country about people who've been wrongfully accused, wrongfully convicted, how their lives were ruined, how the trajectory of their lives were ruined, and how with one broad stroke of a prosecutor's pen can change your life. And no matter what, you never get that back. You never get the reputation, you never get the credibility, and you never get that standing in life back. So that's what kind of led me to this journey, which is speaking. And now, by God's grace and mercy, I'm in the radio business. I'm a radio personality. So, okay.
As Ariana had asked, I would like to, would you like to explain, like, why do you think you were put in this situation, or why are you in this point in your life, and do you think it's, like, a significant purpose?
Good question, young lady. Well, if you were to ask me, I thought my claim to fame was to ride off into the sunset being president of H. Bosch Moving and Storage and doing all the things and enjoying all the fruits of that labor. But I know I was put in this position for a reason, because little did I know there was a bigger plan. And my plan was to touch, to inspire people far beyond the local area in which I serve, the Capital District. I didn't know then, but I know now that it had to be something significant in my life to take place for me or to propel my life to this level so I could be an agent of change. I could speak to the masses, not just here in the Capital District, but all over the country and soon to be probably all over the world. So that's what kind of had to happen, even though I didn't like it, because I said to myself when it happened, I share this little story. When I speak, I said to myself, well, God, the next time you want to get my attention, instead of having me arrested, charging me with 4 felony counts, facing 35 years in prison, just email me, you know? So anyway, you know, I always share that line. So next question. And you guys are doing great.
Would you say that you got arrested because you was a black male?
I like that. Dig right in. I will say this, okay? And I'm a person who really believes in the spirit of hard work. I believe the harder I work, the luckier I get. So I never played the color card. I used to always say that I'm a very good company that happens to be a minority. But when I dig into my case and what happened and how things played out, yes, it was because, one, color did factor into the decision. 2, money factored into the decision. Let me just elaborate a little bit. I was arrested and charged for allegedly burning down my own house. At that time, my house was worth $72,000, but it was insured for almost $500,000. So this played into the insurance hand. And once again, not digging too deep into the storyline, insurance companies, they're in business to make money, not pay out money. And they, at the end of the day, did not want to pay me what they owed me. So they did everything they could to get out from under the rock, which ultimately led to me being arrested, charged with arson, second-degree insurance fraud, et cetera, et cetera. But that's a whole other story. But I think color did factor in.
So because we know that you are a motivational speaker, what can you say to help or motivate our viewers or us as youth?
What I would say to you young men and women, one, is to don't be afraid to fail, okay? As I shared with you, Ariana, I have failed far more times than I succeeded. But my failures or my successes, as few as they have been, have outweighed and outshined my failures, okay? So don't be afraid to fail. And I tell everyone, fail big. You know, be like the baby bird. Jump out the nest and grow your wings second, all right? Don't be afraid to fly. Don't be afraid to go after your dreams, okay? Because that's the most important things. You have to pursue your own dreams. Follow your own dreams or else you will wind up helping someone else build theirs. Now, secondly, I want to share with you, young men and women, you oftentimes get caught up, especially young ladies and young men, of finding Miss Right or Mr. Right. Well, my advice to you young men and women, instead of trying to find Mr. Right or Miss Right, you become Mr. Right. You become Miss Right, and they will find you. Okay?
Yes.
You work on you. All right? You like that?
Yes.
Okay.
Kind of like if you want love, be love.
Well said. Yep. I have we'll get to that another time, the 5 principles of love. But I'll share that with you later on.
Okay, so we've done youth segments in which we shared poetry and talked about how art can be used to overcome obstacles. So what are your thoughts on the healing power of art and creativity, and has creativity played a big role in your life?
Absolutely, I think creativity played a big role in my life. One is I had to be creative to pick myself up by the bootstrap and rebuild my life. You know, once again, I had a very successful life. I literally lived like a pro athlete, tailor-made suits, traveling all over the world, 3 cars, you name it, you know, sitting courtside at games, and lost that all. And the worst thing that can happen to you is when you lose something, when something is ripped out of your life when you least expect it, you got to be creative in rebuilding it. You got to come up with things, think outside of the box. You know, so I had to come up with some things. So I said, well, you know, what I thought was my life passion, my business, I mean, I gave my blood, sweat, and tears to that business, is gone. So what do I have left? Well, I knew, I always liked people. I always thought of myself as a pretty good communicator, and I love to help people. I always knew in my DNA, somewhere, somehow, I was going to make a difference. So I said, well, how do I put all three of those together and really be effective moving forward in my life? And one, spending the rest of my life helping people, because I decided after all of this happened, someone once told me, he says, if you spend your life helping others get what they want, God will always bless you with what you want. So far, that's what's happening to me, being creative.
Okay. So many people have talked about the need for community and discussions of community. Is a more fragmented technological society. Do you have thoughts about how?
I didn't understand the question.
Do you have thoughts about how to build more community in Troy?
Do I have thoughts?
On how to build more community in Troy.
Absolutely. Being involved right here. You guys are the gatekeepers. You are our future, okay? You are an investment. So me, based on my life experience, I'm pouring into you because my goal is for you to be better than me. I don't want you to have what I have because God has blessed me. I'm all right. But if I truly do my job in motivating, empowering you, you're going to be extremely successful. You're going to be more successful than I am. So that's my job, to pour into you. Yes, pour into the community which surrounds me. My legacy is, when I'm gone, I want to see Ariana. I want to see you. I want to see this young lady walk across stage. And if you guys just mention one iota of, hey, you know, back then, this person, or, you know, Bosch said this, he said that, I know I'm successful.
Thank you. Well, that's a wrap. So thank you, Bosch, for telling us.
Well, thank you, guys. It's been a plum pleasing pleasure to be on the show and to be with you. And I wish you continued success, all right? And yes, continue to follow your dreams.
Thank you.
Well, now we have Trayvon Votrin with our youth community events calendar.
Enjoy free ice skating and free rentals on Friday, December 8th. This will include a full-service snack bar and a skate lounge with lockers and music. The event will be located at the Empire State Plaza in Albany, New York. Don't forget to come down to Snuffle Vision Photography Shop to watch a free movie for kids, located at 111 101st Street, Troy, New York. Every Sunday, 5 to 7:30 p.m. Hope to see you there.
That was Trayvon Votrin with the Youth Community Calendar. A big thanks to H. Bosch Jr. for coming into the studio and being interviewed by Lauren Wilson, Aaron Pinder, and Ariana Young, our youth interns. That concludes our show. Once again, we hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Hudson Mohawk Magazine. I'm Megan Marone.
And I'm Kristen Parsons. Remember to tune back in tomorrow and every weekday at 7 a.m., 9 a.m., and 6 p.m. to get your daily dose of local news.
To learn more about this program and how you can support the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit our website, mediasanctuary.org.
If you'd like information on how you can participate in the production of this program or have suggestions on stories you'd like to hear about, email us at info@mediasanctuary.org.
If you're interested in being part of the radio crew, we hold meetings here on Monday nights at 7:07 at the Sanctuary for Independent Media, located at 3361 6th Avenue in Troy.
Until next time, thanks for tuning in.